What did we get from the G20 meeting?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in New York, good morning. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Leaders of the world's 20 wealthiest nations rang the closing bell on their annual summit today. There was no trade deal between the U.S. and South Korea, no formal call for countries to stop undervaluing their currencies, and not much of a public currency fight between the U.S. and China. So, what did happen at the summit? Here's Marketplace's Rob Schmitz with the play-by-play.
It turns out the battle royale everyone is expecting had already happened in the messy lead-up to the summit. What emerged from the more civil G20 summit, says economist Michael Pettis, was a weak agreement for countries to keep an eye on unsustainable trade imbalances.
There's no framework for deciding what is an unsustainable imbalance, and there's no mechanism for forcing unsustainable imbalances to go away. So basically, it doesn't really mean much.
Countries with surpluses say they need them for growth. Deficit countries like the U.S. blame high unemployment on demand that's leaked abroad. How will we know if today's agreed-upon framework will work? Leaders said they'd wait to finish their imbalance assessment at next year's G20 summit. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
By now, you've heard about the plan that was released Wednesday to cut U.S. deficits by $4 trillion over the next decade. It came from the leaders of the President's Deficit Commission, and it involves cuts to entitlement programs and military spending, as well as some tax increases. Well, Republican Congressman Dave Camp is a member of the full deficit panel, and he joins us now from his home district in Michigan. Congressman, welcome to Marketplace.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let me first get your reaction to the proposal from the president's debt panel. What's your take on that generally? Are these things that you think can happen?
Well, generally, I think it's a very serious proposal. If nothing else, I think this preliminary report really shows the difficult choices that have to be made and what we need to do if we're going to get our debt under control.
You sound pretty open to this. Do you think that your colleagues are going to be, by and large, with you on that sort of thing?
Well, make no mistake, I do have problems with it. I think the way they structure the Social Security reforms are not necessarily the way I would do it. I think it's worth having the debate on. But I would say to those who are critical of this provision or that provision, send me a complete report. Send me a report that will get us to a 3% deficit as part of our economy.
Congressman Camp, you're going to be chairing the powerful Ways and Means Committee in the House, at least for the next 2 years. This is a committee that oversees taxes and trade. What is your top priority?
Well, I think the top priority is to make sure we don't have a tax increase. I think our economy has not recovered. Our unemployment is still at 9.6%. So I think we need to send a clear signal, and I would suggest permanently that we not have a tax increase. I think that'll be the first order of business.
Would you be okay with this idea that's been floated of a temporary extension of the books tax cuts for maybe 2 years?
I don't think 2 years is long enough. We need to have a long-term certainty so there's some long-term growth in the economy, and I think if you shorten it to 2 years, I think uncertainty comes back in just a few months.
Congressman Dave Camp, Republican of Michigan, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thanks, Jeremy.
And let's do the numbers. Markets are down across Europe and Asia right now amid concerns that Ireland might need a bailout. Yesterday, the Dow fell 73 points to close at 11,283.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Microsoft, providing comprehensive business solutions for the cloud. You can learn more at Microsoft.com/cloud. By The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at The Economist online. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 800-555-TREE.
Start spreading the news.
This is a Manhattan-bound train.
We're going to be broadcasting from New York instead of Marketplace headquarters in Los Angeles for the next few months. And we're starting things off this week with some conversations with the people who make the economy here in the Big Apple what it is. Today, we're joined by fashion icon Cynthia Rowley. Welcome to Marketplace.
Thanks for having me. Welcome to New York.
How has fashion felt the recession and the recovery, do you think? Can you see it in what people wear, whether we're in a recession or not?
Oh, you know, there's all those old sayings, you know, the skirt lengths and all that. But now I think there's so many options that I don't think we can pinpoint any of those benchmarks like that anymore.
Have you done anything differently in the last couple of years?
The way I approach fashion is that it's balancing things that are more artistic and therefore maybe a little bit more expensive with things that I think are mainstream staples.
I've heard that trends can start in New York, that people start walking down the street with an ensemble that's different, then somebody else sees it, copies it, then next thing you know, it's in Vogue or a big fashion magazine or it's on the runway. Is that true?
There are a lot of trends that start in New York just because there's so much going on here. You know, it's the center for filmmakers, for contemporary art. And so you find individuals and be inspired by that.
Okay, we're going to do a quick lightning round here.
Oh,
quick questions,
God.
Quick
okay.
answers. Here we go.
Okay.
Is New York the global capital of fashion?
Yes.
What's its main competitor in the United States?
I think there is no competition.
Not L.A. or San Francisco?
Definitely not. Sorry, guys.
What were your kids for Halloween?
Last year, my daughter was a polar bear. And then this year, you know, I can just change the hat and she's a white kitten. So
so that's an economical way to
do
Halloween.
Yeah, it's a great way to do it. And the other one's a kangaroo.
Let me ask you one other thing. We are starting our show now in New York City for the next few months. What is the one thing in this city that we should make sure and see while we're here?
Well, I have a Vespa that I get around town on, and I think everyone in New York should have a Vespa because you can see it all.
I don't know if I want to see 8.5 million people driving around the city on Vespas.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Cynthia Rowley, thank you so much for joining us on our Welcome to New York Week on Marketplace.
Yeah, welcome. Thank you.
And finally, a British supermarket chain has converted a Methodist church into a convenience store. The stained glass windows are still there, right next to the ketchup. One customer said he'd only go on Sundays. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Big chains from Toys R Us to Borders are leasing temporary spaces and opening pop-up stores.
It's really, I think, about capturing the consumer's first impulse to make a purchase.
I'm Bob Moon. Visit while it lasts next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.